Hey everyone, welcome to Secure AF, the podcast about all things cybersecurity. I'm your host, Teddy Underkoffler. Today I'm joined with co-host Donovan Farrow.
What up, humans?
As well as special guest Kevin Seesock.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Kevin, we're going to talk a little bit about cybersecurity training, but before we get into that, can you just tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. So Kevin Seesock, the Director of Technology Services and CIO of OMAG, the Oklahoma Municipal Assurance Group. Don't worry, nobody's ever heard of us. We deal with municipal governments in Oklahoma. And if you've ever heard of like state risk management, we're like that, but for cities and towns. So my side of the house is the cyber insurance side, essentially. And there's a lot of risk management activities to do with that. Anyway, we're a little office out of Edmond, little government stuff. I've had 20 some odd years, I don't know, I've started to lose count, in the public sector in Oklahoma and a variety of different technology fields. And last 7.5, been at OMAG, focused on the cybersecurity aspect as well as OMAG's own IT operations.
Yeah, so I have a quick question. That's a quite a, that is quite the position, especially for an audit perspective and insurance. What got you to that glorious audit stage? You're like, you know what? I'm done with IT. Audit is a gift from God. This is what I want to be a part of.
And I think you were the first person ever to use the word glorious and audit in the same sentence.
That's what we're here for.
Not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the aspect that we come from is insurance. And now we're not an insurance company. We're a government agency. But there's still this perspective of coming at it from cyber insurance. So after 7 years working there, it's been an opportunity to kind of learn about the insurance side, which is the business of audit. And it's all about managing risk. So, you know, obviously, for anybody who has their CISSP, that's what you eat, sleep, and breathe.
Right.
And it really just clicks into place in my head that's a great perspective to come at it, because you just assign financial risk to everything. And look at that from that perspective.
Yeah. So I guess in that kind of makes sense. So it's more of like a very logical answer to which could be a very complicated issue. Like you can kind of expand on it. It's almost like playing a game.
Yeah.
Like you're playing a game. Here are the rules. In order to achieve said goal, you have to do these certain things, level 1 through 10, to make sure they get achieved. Is that kind of the process or the mentality for that?
It is. And there's this, you know, every business leader, every executive, every, in our case, city council member, they're going to be thinking along the lines of finance. How much does it cost to do anything? How much does it cost if we defer maintenance on our city's water systems? And you can kind of come in and speak that same language. It's not the technical aspect, because let's face facts. If we come in spouting technology terms, people turn their brains off.
Right.
It's just, speak English. I hear that all the time. But when you walk in and you start speaking, okay, let's talk finance. Let's talk risk is spoken in the language of dollars.
Yeah.
And if you can walk in and say, look, this is the potential risk. This is your likelihood of occurrence. Let's walk back from there. And these are your top 5 or 10 risks. Here's how much you need to start investing to address these and then mitigate, in our case, of course, in the insurance side, transfer and eventually finally accept your cyber risk. That kind of conversation comes across really well. And it's a lot easier to speak that. The finance people love this because you just want to talk about money? Oh, fine. Well, I can do that. Yeah. No, I don't want to tell you about a bunch of 3-letter acronyms.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
MFA, don't care. Money,
yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, Bitcoin, not interested until we have to pay it for ransomware. Sorry. That's another podcast. But yeah, no, so that's super interesting. So did you have, what was your skill set to get to that? Because, I mean, you're talking about definitely a foreign language from IT people to communicate to a finance person. How do you wedge that gap?
Oh, so I've had a variety of different experiences throughout my career. For about the first 7-8 years, I did adaptive technologies for people with disabilities. And that's just a fascinating field. And I still kind of keep an eye on what's going on with 3D printing and new technologies for prosthetics. I mean, I just saw an article today on new prosthetic technologies.
Wow.
It's a cool field to just even observe from the outside. But essentially, yeah, you know, providing technology tools to people with disabilities to level the playing field. So from there, that actually ended up even becoming a bit of a compliance initiative. Part of my job ended up being in the security group at OSU for a while, doing training, helping people understand. Again, the...
That's fine. Just give me a second.
Damn, that was really loud.
Yeah. I feel like I just played the theremin. Right?
But it serves us. It's like a hibachi grill.
Yeah. All right.
Get back into it when you're ready.
Okay. So part of the aspect there, you know, I even spent a period of time at OSU when I was doing adaptive tech in the security department as a compliance initiative. And while there, I started learning some of these other pieces like HIPAA and FERPA and some of these other compliance regulations and started to get this idea. I don't hold it against me, but I left OSU to go into the private sector for a little while. This little firm, you might have heard of them, called IBM, did SAP basis DBA work for a few years in support of Disney. Load performance testing, a lot of QA stuff was my role. So I got a huge amount of QA experience, and I am proud to say that I have actually retained a couple of little nuggets of information from that.
Nice.
Left that and went back to my other passion, which was app dev, and spent a number of years doing that. I'd always done a little sprinkling of app dev in every one of my jobs, and ended up running the application development team for anywhere between half a dozen to two dozen agencies, depending on what day of the week it was for the state, and left there to come to OMAG.
Sweet.
So all throughout that time, there was these experiences with the security office at the state, security at OSU, quality assurance side is, you know, a little distant, but still that idea that, you know, we've got to make sure the stuff is available as well. That's the other letter of the CIA triad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So I guess kind of going into now that we kind of know your background, kind of where you come from, can you kind of give us a brief description about what we're going to be talking about today and kind of we'll dive into that?
Yes. So I've tried to boil this down as succinctly as possible, and it is ultimately your royal you, cybersecurity professionals across the nation within the sound of my voice, your cybersecurity training sucks. And I've been watching videos, you know, maybe it's on SANS training, maybe you buy some stuff to pass out to your end users. And I'm not talking about the stuff that you and I would sit down and watch, just kind of learn about a new tool or something like that. This is end user cybersecurity training. It's that whole thing we've been talking about for a while now, the human firewall. And the idea that we are cramming people through the same 1 hour a year general overview of cyber risk. Here's what the definition of a vulnerability is. Here's what the definition. Stop it. It sucks. This is not working. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that we're still paying claims. we're still dealing with threats on a daily basis. So clearly, the idea that we go through the same old training, make people sit down in front of the computer-based training once a year, watch an hour, and expect that they're going to protect the entity that they work for is ludicrous. And as cybersecurity professionals, I know, you know, you guys do a lot of pen testing, you guys do a lot of incident response.
Yep.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Yep. The idea that we can start to diminish the costs in the long run, we've got to start focusing on. But it's not answered by just going out and doing it's the winter SANS buy. We're going to buy 10,000 courses and shove them all down our users' throats and call it good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's true because, you know, I don't know what the statistics are, but I could tell you, you know, a lot of ransomware engagements or hacking, whatever you want to call it these days, are from a weak user policy. And, you know, that's become a multi-billion dollar industry because of that. And yes, I know there are a lot of tools and stuff out there. So I guess because the exposure from how do you make people care? I think that's always been my hang up is it, no matter how great the training is, I think even if you had a lot, I just don't think people really care.
So this was my first approach in designing new training courses for the users that I work with. In cities and towns, at OMAG itself, some of our partners, stop trying to approach this from the perspective of, I'm going to teach you how to protect your entity and develop a strong cyber culture. You know,
right.
Bullshit. Nobody cares.
No one wants to. Yeah.
Okay. People focus more on their personal lives and needs than they do their employer. That's just the reality.
Yeah.
And I stand up there and say, look, we're not going to talk about your employer's cybersecurity needs. Yes, that's important. Obviously, you don't want them to go out of business or lose all their money or whatever because you still want a paycheck.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's focus on that. You want a paycheck. You want to protect your own financial interests. So forget your employer for an hour. We're going to talk about your personal cybersecurity. Favorite question I get asked by friends, family, colleagues, coworkers. What is the single greatest thing I can do for cybersecurity? Now, obviously, what is that? MFA. Turn on MFA.
That would have been my answer.
Right.
But essentially, it boils down to, I want there to be a button that I can press to cybersecure my life. Well, I maintain that there is not one button. There are about eight. So I have this whole training course. Takes about an hour. And my favorite thing to do, I say, okay, everybody knows you get up here, you start talking in front of people, and as a presenter, you hate it when everybody pulls out their cell phone. I said, do that now. I want your cell phones out because I am going to show you the eight features you need to turn on your cell phone, the device that you constantly use, have in your hands, that you can use to cybersecure your life. And it's essentially that simple.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot more to it. Yes, don't click on links. Yes, you know, make sure all your stuff's updated. Don't buy Internet of Things. You know, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's like, yeah, we're going to start here. All of those things you're terrified of. My favorite example of this is nobody wants to turn on location tracking. Oh, well, I have location tracking on. The government's going to be watching what I do. Uh-huh. No, they're not. They don't care. Okay, I actually work for the government. I present this to people who work for the government. I say, you all work for the government. I work for the government. None of us have time to care.
Yeah.
We are the government, and none of us are doing this. I mean, I'm talking to like water utility guys sometimes. It's like, you're not watching any of that stuff. I'm not watching any of that stuff. Mark Zuckerberg isn't even watching any of that stuff. The reality is the biggest threat coming after you are hackers that want to empty your bank account. They want money. They want your money. So let's stop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just the idea that move to digital wallets, digital currency, put your cards in your Apple Pay or your Google Pay platform, stop using cards on the, to prevent skimmers from getting after you. Stuff like this. Real tips that use modern technology. Start using the new password generators and password managers built into your cell phone.
Yeah.
Sync them into the cloud, into those platforms' clouds. Now, I know you and I can sit here and think about all of the risks that are associated with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Me, we've all been up there and asked, well, should I use a password manager? And we thought to ourselves, maybe not. Maybe, well, I've had cybersecurity people get up and teach others. It's like, I don't know. We don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket.
Right.
Instead, I'm going to teach you this 45-minute long process to design a secure password.
So, and I think you nailed it. I always laugh, and even for myself, it's like, hey, Donovan, I do love the automated like scramble passwords. They're like 20 characters. I'm like, absolutely. And then it's like, would you like to save it? And I'm like, I don't know if I want to save my, but I'm not going to write it down.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I think for the public, it's a great answer.
It is.
For cybersecurity people, it is also a great answer because if I get credentials to your Gmail account, I can go into settings and then go to privacy and then click all the eyeballs and see all your passwords for everything you've ever saved in your entire life.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to MFA is one of the solutions.
Yes.
It is so I've been studying MFA for, I would say, a hard month now, which is actually an eternity for a security engineer. It is very possible to do so. Very difficult to achieve. How I was able to do that in an engagement, I spoofed a phone number from one of their coworkers. They were utilizing a database that they shared access to, and I kind of found this through just having conversations, and I was able to spoof a message, hey, did you get that number? Kind of like someone in here we might do sometimes, and said, hey, is that me? And I was able to get the MFA to get access to that database. And the other one is malware, but that's very difficult. I'm talking some pretty extreme.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, again.
It doesn't scale well.
It doesn't.
These attacks don't scale well. I mean, this is going to be targeted attacks on specific individuals. And, you know, we're not talking about the governor, the president, yeah. the, you know, people of interest. We're talking about my in-laws. You know, my sister's small business, my, you right. know, family, mm-hmm. friends, individuals, getting people to care at the personal level. And then they will be able to bring those tools, those ideas into their workplaces and start to secure our entities. My favorite thought about this whole thing is that we can hack human behavior. Mm-hmm. We've seen Apple and Google engineers start to do that. Yes, I understand. Yeah. All of those eggs in one basket in the your Google account's password safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But all of them are unique. Mm-hmm. They're, if you turn on all of the other features and use it defense in depth,
yep.
you're really reducing your risk. Now, that's not to say it's eliminated.
Right.
But it's certainly a lot less than using the word password for your password for 150 different accounts.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's adding kind of to that. You're not the low-hanging fruit at that point.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, hey, someone logged into your account from New York. You get a notification that you need to respond to that. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I think all those small steps go in a tremendous way. So that's well said.
Mm-hmm. It's just got to be practical advice. We've been, as cybersecurity professionals, as trainers, we've been far too high-minded over the years.
Yeah.
We've been, you know, trying to get people to care about this. And that's not working. They don't care. They want to ignore it and move on. So I've basically just been telling people, you bring up a new website, you register for an account on, say, Zillow or something on your phone, and it says, hey, I can create a strong password for you. Everybody I know says, oh, I always say no. Or when it says, I want to save my password, I say no. I'm like, okay, stop it. Say yes, always save it, and then turn on MFA and your other protections. And yes, I understand. Every cybersecurity professional is going to look at this and go, well, there's risks associated with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or you could just be a really smart person and put it in LastPass.
Oh gosh.
Hey, but don't worry. They let us know that they didn't get any client information, just the passwords.
No way that could go wrong.
No, of course not.
So I think we've got to stop being high-minded. I've also, you know, and I've got to blame myself here too. We go up there, stand up in front of people to do cybersecurity training, and we say things like, passwords are like underwear. Never share them with anyone. Change them often, et cetera, et cetera. Or the weakest part of any network is the user. Okay, so we're insulting people now
with
you just
really bad
everybody weak
and underwear euphemisms. That was there. Wow.
My favorite one is, and I even printed up these posters and put them all around the office. I'm blaming myself. I've done this too for years now.
Yeah.
Where it's like Uncle Sam going, I want you to practice good cyber hygiene. Okay, nobody cares. It's not working.
I just always kind of interested. I like the term hygiene and underwear. I just want to put that in this discussion today. So throw it out there.
That'll be in the show notes.
Right. Well, I mean, it's an interesting because like, for a while, you hear businesses, especially like what you were saying earlier, where it's small local businesses who are like, well, I'm not big enough target. You know, it's not going to impact me. They're not going to come for me. And you personalize it a little bit. You try and get them to think, okay, you have a business, but separate that for just 1 second. Let's talk about how this can impact you personally. And then eventually it will translate into them hopefully securing their business a bit better.
And it already has impacted them because you walk into a training room, you've got 100 people in the room, you ask people to raise their hands. Who here has ever had either an account hacked or a credit card scammed? And everybody is going to raise their hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that was.
I don't think
I have that.
I think that was one of the springs on the arm.
So the first one was me smacking. Yeah.
It maybe just settled or something.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm going to jump in with an example. Yeah. So speaking of like, we talked about low hanging fruit or my company's too small. We, we worked in incident response for a welding company, very small town in Texas. It had a total of 3 employees, exactly. ransomware the whole company. It was a multi-generational company. All of their AutoCAD files were encrypted. All their historical stuff that they made for their current clients were destroyed. You are not too small enough to get hit by attackers these days. So I just always like to educate people on that. I feel like it used to be like that. I feel like I would say maybe 5 years ago, I didn't see a lot of the low people, like low employee people getting hit, but now it's easy. And you know, it's not millions of dollars. I would say that what that one was, which was kind of strange, it was $15,000, which is still a lot for that company, but they're probably going to pay it. And I worked another one out of Brazil, just throwing this out there. It was a very small ISP, and it was by Mallox, M-A-L-L-O-X. I've never heard of them, but whatever. They wanted Bitcoin in $1,000. I was like, man, you should just pay it. I don't know, man. We roll the dice. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. So yeah, your company is never too small to get hit.
And they're going after our small and medium-sized cities and towns in Oklahoma.
Yep.
I mean, you know, tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars go to offshore accounts due to business impersonation fraud. And, you know, one of my favorite examples, of course, is the city of Enid instead of the city of Enid, Oklahoma. And they just keep coming.
Yeah.
You know, business email compromise have picked up in these areas. And it's all because, you know, you can get essentially a half a year's or a year's paycheck here in the States from one or two hacks.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Yeah. And I think that's the, and I appreciate you kind of even being part of the discussion and reaching a crowd. I think that has been overlooked, I think, by their own selves, thinking that we're too small, but secondarily, an underserved area as well.
Because we see so many people who've, maybe it's their personal Netflix account, maybe their Facebook got compromised, maybe they, you know, got hit by a card skimmer at the gas station or something like that. There are, thankfully, even in small town Oklahoma, USA, plenty of people that are like, yeah, I don't think that idea that it's not going to happen to them, that's gone.
Yeah.
So even out in the sticks, so to speak, even rural Oklahoma, they're like, yeah, we need to care about this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of instances where, I mean, people I know, people I'm friends with, my parents, whatnot, you know, they'll be like, hey, I just got this weird email. They're like, but I went ahead and reset my password. They're like, so it's okay. You know, if it was a device that was logged in somewhere else, they're like, passwords reset should be good to go. Right. And I was like, yeah. For the most part, I think so.
Yeah, and also a good story. My grandpa, who's a gangster, by the way, he's 89 years old, maybe 90. He turned 90 in October. For his birthday, he called me and make sure that I wasn't in a prison in Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. I was like, no, it's not me, Grandpa.
Glad he verified.
He's like, are you sure? I was like, I am sure that I'm not in prison in Mexico, Grandpa. Hey, but thanks for looking out, though.
Yeah.
I feel like you almost paid it. So I appreciate the support on that. But even him realizing, and it probably, I mean, it's what I do, but it was cool to see a 9-year-old guy who was born in 1932, hope my math is right, to be doing that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So the last time I did my presentation on your cybersecurity training sucks, and I've started doing this one now to other cybersecurity professionals. I actually got a comment from one of your newest employees, Jonathan Kimmett, who is making the comment. He's like, have you noticed that boomers are a lot more eager to be secure? And you know, we kind of went back and forth a little bit by chat. And it's like, yeah. And he made the observation. I've got to give him credit for this. It's that whole idea growing up in the Cold War, you know, this loose lips sink ships, this idea that we have to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I had one of those aha moments because I'm watching my daughter who's 18. And what do? They share their Snapchat and Instagram passwords with everybody on the planet. And I keep begging her not to do that. But it's like, oh, no, I need them to post for me when I'm, you know, in class or I can't, you know, phone's dead or something like that. Stop it.
Do you think that has to do with like also trying to think of the boomer and the traditionals? Do you think that has to do with securing future as well? Like getting, obviously it's little ways to retirement, like getting to that point where you could be potentially devastated if your bank account was Tron?
I think so. Yeah, and there's a lot more. There's a lot more understanding of the possible risk. And I, you know, this has just been my own anecdotal evidence with my in-laws versus my daughter. You know, my in-laws were they didn't know what to do. They're all very eager to learn it. Sat down, let me walk them through the whole thing, and I did my little training essentially for two people at their dining room table. And we turned on all of these features, got them to start saving the password and whatnot, and use the strong passwords versus write it down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even made them realize that there's a lot of practical reasons for that as well. Oh, you've been putting all your passwords on a Excel spreadsheet and a thumb drive. Well, and then my mother-in-law's thumb drive died, you know, got broken in a pocket or run through the washer or something.
Right.
It's like, you know, we can recover your life in a lot of ways when you're using the new tools versus how you could before. If you lose your wallet in the taxi and you had cash in it, it's gone. But if you have a digital wallet, you can remotely detonate it. You can track it down. You can protect yourself in other ways. I'm not, you know, I'm not always an advocate for the latest and greatest in new technology, but it really just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But the younger generation, the Zoomers, I'm not sure they've really seen all the risks yet. So they're very open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you kind of think about this, right, we're trying to talk about teaching people how to care about the risk on a more personal, fundamental basis. When you go into a business to try and teach that business that aspect, how does that kind of translate to, hey, I'm coming into your location, but I want to speak to everybody more on like the personal level, even though, yes, this does impact our business.
So it is about developing a cybersecurity culture, just, you know, cyber secure and aware that we've, you know, we've seen this on posters ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't think, though, that you can walk in for an hour a year and create that culture out of whole cloth. I think as a cybersecurity professional, somebody who drives around and does this, you know, trains people on a frequent basis, and they see me, you know, in a single individual might see me once a year, twice a year, once every other year, something like that. The idea that anything I say is going to really stick with them is probably silly. So standing up and saying, you know, here are possible ways that you can get hacked. Here's an example of somebody dressing up like the exterminator and, you know, spraying water out of, you know, all of the, the pen testing
all the
stories,
cool stuff.
Got all it, the cool stories that, that all that does is frighten them. And fear, unfortunately, doesn't do much if you don't actually give somebody a way to avoid the fear.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're just creating hopelessness. So, again, it's like if you really want to develop a cybersecurity culture in an organization, a company, and an entity, what you need to do is start with something that they can accomplish. Let's turn the functions on your phone on. Let's make you more cybersecure for your own personal lives. Eventually, we'll get to the point where you're starting to think, because you've done it at home, when you're at work, you'll think, yeah, why am I not using a more secure password here at the office? I mean, yeah, I care way more about my own bank account than I do. You know, I'm sure this company's got all sorts of stuff, but you know, maybe I'll use some more secure passwords. And it's developing that personal aspect of how they contribute to a cybersecurity culture that you kind of have to just grow over time. And it look, this is probably going to be my job for forever.
Yeah.
I'll retire doing this or die doing it because it's never going to be over.
Correct.
I mean, I do maintain that a lot of our problems go away once we see FIDO2 really take hold. Again, that's kind of that thing. It's like we're using what engineers have done to cybersecure our lives. They've given us all these tools. We just have to turn them on. That's going to translate really well to a passwordless society.
Yeah.
And all we have to do is wait for them to hack human behavior for good. For a change, instead of letting the social engineers do it to us.
No doubt. And I would say a key point there is culture. And I'll just like to give some examples on that. We had a company that wanted us to do that. And I would say they're super forward leaning on that. I thought that was pretty amazing. So what we did, we had contests that we would do social engineering walkthroughs to see who would approach us and say, hey, like, who are you? You clearly don't work here with your ball cap and your green vest and t-shirt. It's fine. Anyway, and we would give them like tickets. So they'd get like a ticket, say, hey, by the way, I'm with the cybersecurity team. Boom, you got a ticket. And these people would like collect these tickets if you got the phishing email and you were able to identify it, forward it to the security team and say, hey, this is the phishing email. They would also get like another point, another ticket. And we had this running board that whoever got the most top 10 would receive some type of award, which was really cool. So we did that for about, it was about 8 months, and it worked really well. People saw it as a challenge. We also did some voice phone calls to see if we could kind of break in that way. And then they had like an award for that, which was, I don't know if it was fair, but it was pretty funny for us because they allowed us to do it. At the end, we had a password challenge. So we had a booth there and we had the awards over there. So we'd have people say, hey, how strong is your password? So we'd have them type it in this program and it'd give them a scale. And it was 1 to 10, which was really cool as we were just saving their passwords, which was the part of the social engineering idea. So nice. They would run upstairs and go change their password for the corporate and then come back down the elevator and test it again. And they were trying to get a better password. But every time they were just typing in our password, that was the final little zing that always be aware. Stay vigilant, I believe, was what I had in my LinkedIn post when someone tried to get me the other day.
You brought up a good point too, the gamification. And, you know, so I've first and foremost, wherever I work, I like to eat our own dog food. You know, let's right. do to ourselves what we're going to do to our partners, to our customers, to our clients and colleagues. And so I feel like, and I know that this could be dashed in a minute, but you guys have actually pen tested OMAG and we got some pretty good results. So I'm confident in saying that we've actually worked hard to develop a pretty solid security culture. Yeah. And a lot of that was the positive reinforcement. It was not the whole, well, you failed a know before test. You clicked the link. So now you've got to go watch the 15-minute video, play the little game, take the quiz,
yep.
and pass, or I'm going to come to your desk and glare at you.
Yes.
We still do that, but now it's like, oh, you found that? Here's a $20 Amazon gift card. Here's a $5 Starbucks gift card. We'll put your name in the hat for a drawing. And we've expanded it beyond that. I maintain that as security professionals, wherever we work, if we're the CISO or an ISSO in an organization and we're not handing out prizes to people who are focused on improving the security of that organization, we're failing in our jobs because positive reinforcement works.
Yeah.
Negative reinforcement doesn't. It just makes people angry.
Yeah. And that gives yeah. security. That's that internet gatekeeper again telling me I can't even take a breath for my job. It's the, you know, the human firewall in the most negative way.
What do you mean I can't put Dropbox on my machine?
Exactly. And again, I'll kind of echo this. I said it just a little bit, but if you don't have a budget, man, again, just any email, if you could, you know, you could put it security@yourdomain.com and have people forward you emails. Hey, I think this is a phishing email. You reply back and say, oh my gosh, you found it. Thank you so much. That you just protect the company. That's a huge W.
Do a yeah. wall of fame.
Yep.
Do a candy bar. I mean, if you have to go out of your own personal bank account and buy a box of candy bars to pass out to people, even that can help change the conversation because people love getting free stuff.
Every little like positive reinforcement helps.
It does. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can even be super cliche, which I worked at a different company. It went over well because everyone's like, hey, we're going to give you another payday. And they gave us a candy bar. It's just heads up on the – it didn't land right.
It was bad.
People were not excited about that.
Yeah, that one's a little rough.
I did eat the candy bar, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, positivity is always better than, like, the fear, the, you know, just – you need to get this done. Why haven't you done this?
Yeah, yes. Scared straight doesn't work. Scaring people into being more cybersecure has not been working for forever. And right. I just telling people, turn on the options. Use the features available to you. I guarantee you that the Apple and Google and Microsoft engineers that have been doing this, I mean, building all of this into their platforms, I understand it's not perfect. It's not 100% secure. Of course it isn't.
Yeah.
But it's certainly better than the password.
Right. And you know, as hackers, I really appreciate you guys not changing your password. So thank you so much for that. Secondly, because I feel like I just keep cutting you off, can you give us the 8 list? I'm not putting you on the spot here, if you don't mind. So everyone, you guys can take a minute. Pull over if you're listening to this on the vehicle. Do not write this while you're driving. We're just going to break this down so you can come back and listen, or you can listen to the top 8.
So top yes. 8 in my, and this is all focused on the device that everybody has already in their hands, their cell phone, asking everybody to turn these 8 on is the two-factor authentication, MFA, the Find My Device feature. So if you lose your phone, you can go get it or remotely detonate it. I always tell people turn on the biometrics. Again, that is tied to so much stuff, and you get all this fear of like, oh, my fingerprint's going to be on there. Mm-hmm. Government's already got your fingerprints. They came to my school when I was a kid. They took my fingerprints in case I got taken by some abductor. I'm not worried about the government having my fingerprints.
Or you committed a crime and they found you later. Sorry.
Yeah, that too.
Moving on. The keychain to store your passwords in the cloud, to sync them between devices. The generate strong passwords, the detect compromised passwords. I walk through that every, this is like an oil change for your passwords. Do it every 3 months or 3,000 miles.
Like that.
The digital wallet, again, that stops the skimmers. It gets us away from the cards. Cards are not working. They can never be fixed. Plastic's going away in our wallets. And
wait, I thought they put the chips in it. What are you talking about?
Solved everything,
That was, we spent all that money and we had to buy new cards?
Still printing the numbers on the back and putting the mag stripes on there. So.
And don't forget to sign them because no one actually looks unless they do. Right. But it never matters.
It doesn't matter.
I'm going to just keep interrupting you because it's funny. Sorry. Not because it's funny. We were making fun of someone's talking about at lunch today. They were like, yeah, man, the signature stuff. I was like, man, the signatures are a prank. Listen, man, you can draw the Mickey Mouse or whatever, just LOL. I was like, and what they're trying to do, what they've historically tried to do is, hey, that's the authenticator to make sure that you can validate that. I was like, man, you could take that to court and be like, hey, I didn't sign for this I didn't draw a happy face as my signature, and it doesn't match. So it's beyond my brain. Do you know, and again, maybe jump off track here, where'd that even come from?
Because I have no idea.
It's a stupid idea.
Oh, well, I had somebody ask me once, it's like, well, don't they actually match your signature up in their servers and stuff like that? No. No, they don't.
No.
I don't know that for a fact, but I know it to be true. No, they do not care.
Yes.
They have not matched up the back of your card that they never even looked at with what's coming across on the little digital signature pads.
Crazy. Did I cut you off on the last one there?
The last one is just kind of all of those extra features, the do not tracks, the built-in VPN that you get with your modern cell phones these days, the hide my email, stuff like that, some of those privacy features. And that also helps kind of some of the people who think that when you tell them that you're going to do GPS tracking and facial scanning and thumbprint this, and you know the government's going to have all my data, it's like, turn all these privacy features on, because I guarantee you the people who are tracking you, advertisers, you're going to make their job a little harder.
Yep.
And we don't know what they're doing with that data all the time, and sometimes it's probably not all that honest, so let's go make their jobs harder too. And those eight features right there. And it's a little different. I pull up screenshots for Apple and Google devices, Android devices, and show. We basically just alternate back and forth. So I have everybody at the start of my classes raise your hands. How many Apple users? How many Google users? Okay, we're going to go back and forth. We're just going to turn all this stuff on. And I have screenshots up on the screen of everything. Go to settings. Go here. Turn this on. And you'd be surprised at the end of the class, everybody's like, so what? We're done? Yep. You are now more cyber secure.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love it. It's tangible. And again, I always repeat myself on this, but that's breaking again the wall of security is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Like, what exactly does that even mean? If we're not getting ransomware, I guess we're doing security, but I like that approach. It's hands-on and it is personal and it makes them think of that. Cause next time they're like, VPN. Oh yeah. The VPN. Yes.
Yeah.
Virtual private. Let's go. And they can understand that communicates. It's tangible.
Yeah.
Which I love. So
yeah. Practical advice. Yeah. Better than these high-minded ideas and posters of, I want you to be more cyber secure.
Right. No, that's awesome. And I mean, as someone who uses a handful of those things that you've said, they go so well together.
Oh my word.
They go so well. I mean, the one where it's generate an automatic password as well as stored in your keychain.
Mm-hmm.
That goes so
and then detect if it gets compromised.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And I always tie this up to my favorite story to tell with the idea that you can't just turn one or two of these on. You need to turn them all on. Defense in depth. It's what, you know, every cybersecurity professional eats, sleeps, and breathes. My favorite story to tell in this is, I believe it was 1961, I'll have to look up the exact terms, but a bomber broke up over North Carolina, dropping a Mark 38 3.8 megaton nuclear warhead over Earlsboro, North Carolina.
Okay.
It fell to the ground, and all but three, I'm sorry, three of the four fail-safes failed. One fail-safe kept that nuke from detonating, which would have killed every living creature within about a 15-mile radius. This is why we preach defense in depth. We have fail-safes for our fail-safes. We have backups. We turn on MFA. MFA is its own fail-safe. We do all of these things because if you only had seven, you would have wished you'd had eight.
Right. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well said.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. Is that a quote? Nah. I feel like you just, is that a patented? We need to trademark that.
Go for it. Yeah. That's public domain. Yeah, it's yours to use.
Yeah, there we go. Nice.
No, this has been awesome. So it sounds like pretty much the key to being able to teach people to care about their cybersecurity is to make it about themselves.
Yeah.
Personalize it. Give them some actionable, tangible ways that they can better secure themselves and in turn learn more and hopefully secure the business going forward.
I agree.
Awesome. Was there anything that we didn't ask you about that you wanted to talk about today?
I think that covers it. I'd like to encourage all of my cybersecurity colleagues to start thinking along these lines. It's a lot harder to focus on the people problem and really dig into it. It's so much easier for us to go buy a piece of equipment. Now let's go buy a new appliance. Let's buy a seam. Let's get a firewall, another firewall. Let's 30 firewalls. How 12 firewalls? Let's buy firewalls. And rack and stack hardware in a rack inside the server closet. That's always easier.
Yep.
Spend a bunch of money, buy a bunch of kit, turn it all on, and figure out what all the features do. It's easier. It's more fun. Working with your individuals, with your colleagues, your coworkers, with your partners, and trying to drive at what is keeping them from being cyber secure is a much harder problem to do. And we've got to start doing it more and better.
Yeah. Well said.
Awesome. Yep.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, that's all I have. Donovan, Kevin, thank you both so much for joining me on the episode today.
Thank you, Teddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Like our show? Listen to full episodes on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else where you get your podcasts. And if you're interested in watching the video, you can find that on our YouTube or on secureafpodcast.com.